This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This is a difficult day for me, more difficult than you guys can imagine, because I know how hard these guys work, and these guys are good coaches, and they're my friends, and we've been through a lot together as a group. But when teams with high expectations such as ours don't have success, then change is inevitable.
That's Pittsburgh Penguins head coach Mike Sullivan discussing the decision to dismiss his assistant coaches, Sergei Gonchar, Mark Recchi, and Jacques Martin, as part of the changes in Pittsburgh after their first round, or their qualification round, defeat at the hands of the Montreal Canadiens. Jim Rutherford, Penguins general manager, certainly was vocal in his criticism of defenseman Justin Schultz. Things in Nashville also not so great. David Poile critical of the team, saying changes need to be made. Looks like it's going to be an interesting offseason in both Pittsburgh and Nashville. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290, the segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I could go for an icy sandwich right about now.
You say that every week.
Yeah, and I do.
I know. You basically, you're consistent in that manner.
Drew, I know we want to talk about the Penguins here, but we were kind of curious talking off air who the backup goalie for the Boston Bruins is going to be today versus the Carolina Hurricanes. It's going to be 22-year-old Daniel Vladash, spelled V-L-A-D-A-R. He's a third-round pick from 2015. No NHL experience. Split the last year between Providence. He played one game for Atlanta in the East Coast Hockey League. So he's going to back up Yaroslav Halak today.
And the reason for that is, if you're just joining us, Tuukka Rask, Boston's all-world goaltender, has opted out of the NHL's return to play. He has left the bubble in Toronto to go home with his family. He has a young family and a newborn at home. He's decided that family right now more important than the Boston Bruins, and so the Bruins are dealing with the ramifications of that decision on this Saturday morning, and they're actually going to be in action in about 20 minutes' time, so a big opportunity for Yaroslav Halak as the Bruins' number one goaltender going forward. So we heard about, you know, I find it, somebody tweeted this yesterday, I found it interesting that, I'm not sure when it happened, but all of a sudden, firing the assistant coaches on any team that disappoints is the panacea, apparently, of all that ails a team. If you're the Penguins, and there's been some great reporting done by Josh Yohe of The Athletic,
yep,
and you know, our buddy
Rob Rossi,
yep, and Seth, our buddy Seth Rohrabaugh. Yep. These guys cover the team, and it just sounds like it's, you know, it's more dysfunction than function as it pertains to the Pittsburgh Penguins right now. So that's a team that's probably looking for some significant off-season moves. And same with Nashville. I mean, both of these teams, disappointing losses where they looked relatively listless, where they looked relatively, I'm almost going to say, a little bit arrogant in how they played. And as a result, both teams are at home, and the general managers are yet again promising changes.
Yeah, and just going back to the assistant coaches, guys, like, what other team has three, like, Hall of Fame quality coaches like that, right? Like, Sergei Gonchar had a illustrious NHL career.
Yeah.
Mark Recchi is in the Hall of Fame. Jacques Martin will be in the Hall of Fame. And
probably, you know, in the builders category.
Right, and Gonchar is arguably a Hall of Famer. I'm just saying, like, and the thing is, like, those aren't, like, three just, you know, average coaches. Like, first off, all those coaches have been around for the Stanley Cups. Gonchar is particularly close with Evgeny Malkin.
Yeah.
And Jim Rutherford came out and he said, this has nothing to do with Malkin. And I believe him, but just saying, like, think about what Gonchar did with John Marino this year. Think about what he did with Justin Schultz 3 or 4 years ago. Like, Gonchar is considered a very smart hockey coach.
Schultz was a reclamation project, if you remember. He was a guy who they picked up off the scrap heap, who had struggled in his time in Edmonton, and that came to an end in not the prettiest fashion, and he turned Schultz into a defenseman that the Penguins relied on significantly to win two Stanley Cups.
Right, and so these,
and now they throw him onto the bus on his way out, which I thought was pretty classless by Jim Rutherford.
No, absolutely. I agree. And that's why the hockey world was shocked by that, right? You were thinking, you know, okay, let's wait and see what Pittsburgh does in the offseason, and then they decide to fire the entire Sullivan staff, right? So extremely disappointing. I agree with you, Drew. That game against the Montreal Canadiens, the thing to me that was...
Game four, where it's do or die for them.
Yes, do or die. And you were so good during the regular season, right? Like, You had the injuries to Crosby, the injuries to Malkin, Jake Gensel. They wouldn't have had him if the playoffs started in April. They would have probably not had him at all.
Yeah.
Even if they went on a long playoff run, they wouldn't have had him. And, you know, you mentioned that article in The Athletic, Josh Yoey and Rob Rossi. Basically, you know, for those who haven't read it, it's inside the locker room, and they quote team executives, players, current and former.
Quote them anonymously.
Yes, quote them anonymously, if I can say
it properly. Easy for you to say there, big boy.
Anonymously, and they really do a deep dive into the entire season, and particularly heading into the bubble and into the playoffs. And one of the things they focus on is that Matt Murray was chosen, obviously, as the starting goalie, despite Tristan Jarry basically being excellent for the months of, you know, November, December, and January. And Matt Murray obviously didn't play well against the Montreal Canadiens, certainly going up against Carey Price. But what he said is there was kind of a divided locker room there. And aside from the goalie situation, he really talks about there's a certain arrogance around this team where, you know, they think that they're almost entitled to go on a long playoff run every year, guys. But, you know, you were swept last year. And you don't even get to the round of 16. The Montreal Canadiens, you know, one of the bottom seeds in the entire league. I mean, it has to be a very disappointing, you know, finish to the season. And you wonder, what do you do here? Because, you know, bringing in Jason Zucker, that to me and to everybody else, really, most people, I should say, I can't speak for everybody else, but that looked like a good trade, right? Like, you're bringing in another speedy guy. I mean, Phil Kessel was a guy that you traded because you weren't happy with the way he played in last year's playoffs. Like, I guess what I'm asking is, like, what moves are up Jim Rutherford's sleeve, right? Like,
well, that's why I think it's such nonsense. You know, he comes out and you know, and the fan base is upset, and so he has to say something about how, you know, we won't stand for this disappointment and we won't stand for this mediocrity. When ultimately, unless you're going to fire Mike Sullivan or Jim Rutherford himself is going to get fired, I mean, those are that's the only moves you have left. You're not going to trade Crosby. You're not going to trade Malkin. I mean,
well, Chris
I'm not
Letang
sure
is a guy.
But why would you trade Letang?
I don't think Letang is a guy you move, especially considering where he's at in his career.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the core of this team. Like, Matt Murray is gone. Like, Matt Murray's going to sign with another team.
He's an RFA, so they're not going to qualify him is probably going to be the case.
Tristan Jarry is your goalie of the future, and I think Jarry's a good goaltender.
Also an RFA, but he's making no money at all. So,
right.
I mean,
and I guess they could sign Murray, but the belief in Pittsburgh is that they're going to sign Jarry.
Yeah.
Matt Murray's going to go elsewhere, right, Dave? The point I think that has to be addressed is this core of the team with Crosby and Malkin and Letang and, you know, Patrick Hornquist and Jake Gensel. I mean, we all know the players. This is a win-now team. Mm-hmm. They've probably got, what, 3 or 4 years left of really elite years for Crosby and Malkin. So they're going to have to acquire players via free agency and via trade. I mean, you can't start a rebuild right now, Dave, right? Like, you have to keep going on the road that you've been on the last 4 or 5 years.
The irony is that they've been aggressive, and Jim Rutherford is an aggressive general manager, but a lot of his moves haven't worked out. I mean, his trade for Nick Bjugstad from the Panthers didn't work out. Don't they have Jared McCann? They have Jared McCann. They got him from the Panthers. Didn't work out. I mean, the Gensel trade, or pardon me, the Zucker trade is too soon to say if it's worked out or not. But a lot of the problems that the Penguins have faced, I mean, you know, they're, you know, have to do with, I think, some of the decisions made by Jim Rutherford. So, you know, I don't know. I think talk is cheap, and I think a lot of what he was saying there was just, you know, pretending, I'm upset, I'm not going to take it anymore. But ultimately, I don't know what he's going to be able to do, Dave, quickly.
Well, I think that, you know, to your point, these are his moves. Now, some fan bases would say, well, at least he's making those moves. At least he's being aggressive, and, you know, he's trying to augment. And, you know, if you read the article that the guys put out in The Athletic, some of them were saying, like, look what our team was able to do with all the injuries we had. And Paul Maurice even talked about it in his availability, talking about how Sullivan deserved consideration for Coach of the Year simply based on what he was forced to deal with in terms of player injuries.
Yeah, without Malkin, without Crosby at various times this year, Zucker. Yeah.
That's right. So they were missing these key pieces, and yet they still chugged along with what they were able to do. So the players, their inquiries were, well, if we were able to do what we were able to do when we weren't healthy based on that lineup, why would you go and augment it by bringing in these guys and trading away well-liked pieces? And so to me, that you know, we talk about that. We talked about that with Tampa. You know, you don't want to upset the boat, maybe slightly add one kind of depth piece, but you really don't want to make a big trade because your team's kind of cruising along. And I think that's where a GM has to be aware of over-tinkering with their lineup, because clearly in Pittsburgh, it upset the apple cart with what they were doing in the regular season.
And the big trade, of course, was bringing Connor Sheary back from the Sabres and along with Evan Rodriguez. For Cahoon, a young player who apparently knew his role and fit in well. And, you have to be careful. Sometimes the worst move is the move that you do make as opposed to the move that you don't
make. And Sheary was fine. Like, Sheary to me is a guy that is familiar with Crosby. They've played together before.
Right.
And you didn't have Guentzel, right? So, like, you acquired Sheary at the time because you didn't have Guentzel. So, like,
Knowing there was going to be a global pandemic that was going to shut everything down.
No, but you make a good point, Drew. I mean, not all of the moves Rutherford have made have been home runs, right? Like, some of the moves have been kind of, they haven't been that great. Like, John Marino, very underrated move. What did they give up, a fifth-round pick for Marino? And what did he have, 40 points or something
this
year?
Where did they get it from? Chicago? Is that right?
Edmonton,
okay.
Wasn't it? I thought it was Edmonton. Edmonton or Chicago, but Marino has been really good.
And he develops, under the guidance of the assistant coach and Sergei Gonchar.
Yep.
And everyone in that article that we referenced has spoken so much about how influential Gonchar was.
Yep.
And then for some reason you dismiss Gonchar.
Well, I think that's a message being sent, though, as well. I don't think it's just to the coach. Like, I don't think he's making those moves. I think he's clearly restructuring the coaching staff, right? And so when you look at this team, though, I agree with Dave. I don't necessarily think you have to do anything bold, but I think we also have to kind of simplify it here, guys. And say, what did they score, 5 or 6 goals, the Penguins, against the Habs? Like, they ran into Carey Price. Like, they didn't get goals. And their power play stunk. Like, they were not good. And they were not good last year versus the Islanders. But when you look at the team, I mean, Crosby, Malkin, Guentzel, I mean, Brian Rust had a career. Like, it's still a pretty good team. I don't think it's, like, a top-tier team. Mm-hmm. Certainly a good enough team, Dave, to get into the playoffs every year. Right? But, like, it just seems like they haven't elevated when they've needed to. The last 2 years, they have stunk.
Playoffs.
I'm sorry. I don't know how else to sugarcoat it. They haven't played well.
Well, if there's anybody who knows about stinking, it would be you there, Ezzy. So, on that note, let's head to break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the Western Conference playoff series that are underway. The first round, well underway. We'll talk about that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Puck behind the Vancouver goal. Now Hughes comes away with it. Pass up the left side for Horvat. Moving it on Bennington. Horvat shoots. He scores! An overtime winner. Second of the game for Bo Horvat on the long pass from Quinn Hughes. The Vancouver Canucks take a 2-0 lead on the defending Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues.
From Friday night's Game 2 between the Canucks and the Blues, Kenny Albert with the call from our friends at NBC Sportsnet. The Canucks lead the Blues 2-0 in in the 5-4 matchup. When you look at the NHL's reseeding after the qualification round, 2-0 for the Canucks, 2-0 for the Avalanche over the Coyotes, 2-0 for the Golden Knights over the Blackhawks.
Can we agree that Bo Horvat's goal was the nicest goal ever?
No, we cannot.
Like ever, ever?
Like ever?
I mean, one of the nicest goals I've ever seen. It was like a video game goal.
I mean, it was a very nice goal, but I'm not sure about the
it's
nicest
a very
goal ever.
Statement, Ezzy.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of your back meds might be going to your brain a little bit there, big boy. You know, you might want to tone down on the dosage a little bit. And, of course, last night, Calgary defeating Dallas to take a 2-1 lead in that series. So, I mean, right now, to me, in the Western Conference playoffs, the Vancouver Canucks are the most surprising team, being up 2-0 on the Blues.
Fair
and apparently
enough.
Craig Berube, non-committal in saying that he's going to go with Jordan Binnington in Game 3 of that series.
So do you not go with Binnington?
Well, if you don't think he's been good enough, then you go with Jake Allen and you hope that Allen's going to...
The veteran can come through.
I mean, I think it's a very... I don't know. I think if you do that, to me, it's probably a bit of a panicky move. Binnington has been so good for really, you know.
Does he look nervous?
Not to me. But, I mean, for the last 18 months or so, or, you know, give or take a few months there, Binnington has looked like one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. So going with Allen here, to me, would be pressing the panic button moment for Craig Berube. But, you know, stranger things have happened. But to me, of all the teams in the West so far, Vegas and Colorado look like the two best teams right now, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about the fact that the Blues haven't won a game yet in the bubble?
It's concerning.
Right? Like, the Blues are defending Stanley Cup champions. Like, obviously, you know, the round robin, you know, we could debate, you know, whether, you know, that was a sham or not. And I think it was, because the regular season, I think, should have counted. Like, to me, the Philadelphia Flyers are a great story, you know, getting that top seed. But you should have also, you know, factored in the regular season points. But again, I sound like a broken record here, guys. But absolutely, Colorado looks really good. I think Arizona's done in that series. And give the Coyotes a lot of credit, because in Game 1, Darcy Kuemper was the only reason that game was close going into the third period.
The only reason that game wasn't 12-0.
Absolutely. And, you know,
what did the Coyotes have, 15 shots in Game 1? I think it was something pretty small.
I think it
like
was.
That.
I think it was 40-14 or 41-15 or something like that. I mean, yeah. It was really lopsided. And, you know, Kuemper has been such a great story all year long. But, you know, Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and Mikko Rantanen, it's just such a fun team to watch. Philip Grubauer has been really good. Mm-hmm. I think Nazem Kadri is such a good story, because Nazem Kadri for years heard it, how he just never could, you know, get the Toronto Maple Leafs to the next round. It wasn't just on Kadri.
Well, no, but they made it seem like subtracting him from their lineup was going to solve what everything that ails them.
And he's so much better suited as a second line center than as opposed to, like, for years, you know, he was cast as a first line center, right? And he's just so good in that role. And, you know, that winning goal that they scored with, I think it was 4 minutes left. Obviously, it's a bit of a fluke. It goes right to Burakovsky. But, you know, give Kadri credit. He's always had that, you know, nose for the net. He always knows, you know, where to put the puck. And he's been really good, you know, throughout the, you know, the round robin and the couple of games here in the first round. So it just looks like that Colorado team. You know, I look at that. I always like to look at that fourth line and the depth players, probably because that was the type of hockey player I was for River Heights Community Center. But, you know, when you look at, like, Matt Nieto.
The team didn't even have a third line, though. That was the problem. He was on the fourth line, and the team didn't even have a third line.
Look at the acquisitions they made. Pierre-Edward Belmar, Matt Nieto, and Matt Calvert. That's your fourth line.
Which goes to my point, but that's a fourth line.
That's a great fourth line.
It's a fourth line with an identity that knows what their job is, game in, game out, shift in, shift out.
Which is what you said last week.
About the Jets needing a fourth line that knows their identity. Now, their identity could be different than the way the top three lines play. It doesn't have to be the same.
Yeah.
But that's where the Jets, I think, are terribly lacking, is that their fourth line is just a mix of bodies with no identified role. Which is what, to Ezzy's point, the Avalanche have with their fourth line, Dave.
They have four great lines, three really good scoring lines. Even the fourth line can chip in some offense. The defense looks really good. And as far as Vegas goes, I mean, Chicago's just overmatched. I mean, you know, good for Chicago. You know, they get past Edmonton, but you're going up against a Vegas team that has aspirations of going on a really long run. And it's just so funny to me that it's Robin Lehner versus Chicago in the first round, right? Like, you're going up against the guy you traded, so.
And he spoke about that, about how that was an advantage to him because he knew a lot of the guy's tendencies.
Having faced them in practice.
So he said that really did play into giving him a bit of an advantage when it comes to actual gameplay. But yeah, you can't see that situation. I mean, he was pretty funny. I think his tweet was like awkward when obviously the Hawks eliminated the Oilers, and it was determined that they were going to be playing Vegas. So pretty funny situation. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Colorado's looked phenomenal. I think Vegas has looked really good. I mean, again, you got to kind of get excited about Vancouver, right?
The way they're playing,
the fact that, you know, like, Calgary beating Dallas. Like, you know, we didn't really know how that one was going to go either. So especially when they lose Tkachuk and they don't have him for game three. So to me, like, there's been so many good game stories in the West. It doesn't seem as tight as it is in the East, as it has been in the East, but still a lot of fun, a lot of good stories in the West.
And just quickly, I mean, that's a killer overtime goal yesterday, right? Like, by Bo Horvat, like, mm-hmm. They tie it up, the Blues, that is, tie it up with, I think it was 6 seconds left.
Yeah, 6.4.
Alex Petrangelo walks the line, and he puts the shot on net, and then it goes off of Perron, and then Jaden Schwartz as well, and they review it. But just, you know, sending that game to overtime, and then obviously not winning the game. The Blues, if there's any team that can come back in a series, it is the Blues. But, man, going down 2-0, I think it's going to be very tough for them. So, I agree. Vancouver's a great story. And who knows, in this unpredictable year, you know, maybe they do have a long run in them. The way Bo Horvat is playing, Elias Pettersson looks incredible. I mean, Quinn Hughes might be the most exciting defenseman in the NHL right now. Jacob Markstrom is having a really underrated postseason. So, Yeah, we'll see what happens, but I think St. Louis is in big trouble.
We'll keep a close eye on it, of course, and when we come back, we shift our focus to the Philadelphia Flyers. Our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo joins us to talk about the Flyers, their playoff run, and their series so far against the Montreal Canadiens. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We're trying to get a hold of Anthony Sanfilippo to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. I think Ezzy is texting Anthony right now. It looks like they're going to be good to go. So we'll bring
Anthony. Texting Anthony some emojis.
Oh, there you go. That's That was really weird when you sent him the eggplant emoji, though, Ezzy. The eggplant and the peach was weird of you to do that right there. Anyways, so we'll bring Anthony in a couple seconds here. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So as I mentioned, Anthony's going to join us here momentarily. What do you think about the Flyers, the Canadiens putting out their number one power play up 5-0 last
night? I knew you were going to bring that up.
Well, I just wanted, while we're waiting for Anthony, what did you think about it?
I mean, what do I think about the Flyers losing 5-0?
Sure.
How about that?
There's that fine.
I mean, Claude Julien was not the coach.
We wish him our best, of course. Yeah. He had a heart procedure.
Yeah,
so
sorry, Kirk Muller is what I meant to say. He addressed it and he said that he wanted his power play out there because they weren't very good, in the first round against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, I mean, do I think that he was rubbing it in, or is there some unwritten rule that if a team is up 4 or 5 goals, Dave, you shouldn't put out your top power play unit? I mean, to me, if I was the Flyers, I would be more concerned about, how they're going to respond in Game 3 here as opposed to, the Habs putting out their power play unit.
Well, I mean,
power play unit.
Yeah, I agree with Ezzy. I think that you can try and make that a rallying call for the troops and say, oh, look how they disrespected us.
And that's what Vigneault's doing.
For sure. I think so, absolutely. But at the end of the day, I think that your bigger concern should be how can you stop Jesperi Kotkaniemi and the rest of the guys on the Montreal Canadiens as opposed to worrying about power play issues and whether they should have put out their first power play unit or not.
Well, I think that what happens here is that with the news about Tuukka Rask, mm-hmm. this changes the whole dynamic of the Eastern Conference playoffs.
I mean,
I think they were wide open to begin with, but now they're even more wide open when a team's number one goaltender goes down. I believe we have Anthony on the line, so let's head to the Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
He's one of our Hall of Fame guests here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo joins us on the line. Anthony, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, guys. Where can I go to see that bronze statue of myself in the Hall of Fame?
we'll get it commissioned, you fly up to Winnipeg, and I promise we'll have the bronze statue on display. I mean, it might very well just be a golden Burger King crown and carved into your shape of your face, but either way, it still works, right?
It sounds perfect for me, to be honest with you.
There you go. That's what I figured you were going to say. Anthony obviously brought you on to talk about the Flyers. Let's start with the big news of the day, not Flyers related, but that of their rival in the Eastern Conference, Tuukka Rask, departing the bubble, leaving his Bruins team to go be with his family. Does this change the dynamic of the Eastern Conference, in a sizable manner? Does this change maybe what the Bruins can do in terms of a ceiling? And how does that impact the Flyers?
Well, yeah, I think it changes things pretty significantly. I mean, Tuukka Rask was one of the finalists for the Vezina, right? So you're talking about one of the top goalies in the league this season. And I know there's been a break, and so you lose a little bit of that momentum. But even still, he was one of the top three goalies in the entire NHL. So to have him opt out at this point is a big blow for Boston. Anton Khudobin, I guess, is their backup, and he's going to get all the work here moving forward. And he's a decent goalie, and, could they still win this series against Carolina with him? Sure, and then you move forward. I guess the question then becomes, who are you playing in the next round, right? Because I think an offensive-minded team will now have an advantage over Boston You know, if Boston moves forward and they're playing Tampa, let's say, in the second round, which would be 2-3, I think that's a big advantage to Tampa. So I think that, you know, it certainly could, Boston's 4, so they would move to the second round. Let's say they're playing Philly, the same thing, right? They're playing the Flyers. I think it's an advantage for Philly and for Tampa. Let's just put it that way. If they play somebody else somehow in the second round, maybe not as much. But it's certainly, you know, if you're a Flyers fan here in Philly, I know it's a big news because it's like, well, if we play Boston now, their top goalie's out. So, that should help the Flyers. The Flyers have to worry about getting past Montreal before they really look ahead to a team like Boston.
Well, the talk about that, obviously, a dispiriting loss by the Flyers last night, getting handed by the Canadiens, their worst defeat. I believe their only defeat so far in the bubble. You know, this Flyers team had looked, superlative so far. Is last night an aberration, or is last night a sign of something to be concerned about as that series enters into their game 3?
Well, I think anytime you lose a playoff game 5-0, there has to be some level of concern, right? I mean, you know, games should be close, you know, one way or the other. You should not lose 5-0, especially if you are a number one seed. You should not lose 5-0. And I know the Flyers aren't your classic number one seed. They earned the number one seed in a unique manner. But nevertheless, that you don't lose games 5-0. But what I got out of it, both watching the game and then, you know, being on the Zoom press conferences with the players and the coach, I really get a sense that they kind of realized yesterday that maybe they were taking this Montreal team for granted a little bit. They're certainly the 24th team out of 24 in the bubbles, and that's 24 out of 31 teams. So you sit there and say, yeah, this Montreal really doesn't deserve to be here. Maybe they caught the Penguins napping in the first round, whatever the case might be. And the Flyers won game one, not playing their best game and still won the game. And so maybe they're sitting there thinking, you know, we won that game, you know, even if we weren't playing at 100% ability level. So maybe we could do the same thing here in game two. And you guys know, I mean, the players might tell you they don't listen to the conversation about them. They don't read the paper. They don't follow social media. It's a bunch of malarkey. You know that they do, right? And so the Flyers have been kind of feeling themselves a little bit. You know, they know that they're considered one of the best teams, and they're now in odds-on favor to win the cup and everything. And maybe they just needed that little bit of a, you know, dose of reality. That, guess what? It's not easy to win in the NHL. Remember that. And I think that that's what yesterday's game was more than anything else.
You know, Anthony, I have to ask you about this because obviously, you know, the Flyers are such a good story considering that, you know, they weren't considered, you know, a top three or top four team in the Eastern Conference, but they beat out the Toronto Maple Leafs and they end up playing in the round robin and they end up being the number one seed, winning all three games. But, you know, you look at the Flyers right now and obviously, you know, game two was really disappointing. Game one, you know, they pick up that big 2-1 victory and Carter Hart was really good, but so far through five games, Claude Giroux, no goals. Sean Couturier, no goals. Travis Konecny, no goals. Game one, you know, Jake Voracek scored his first goal. So if you're a Flyers fan, is that the silver lining here? You're looking at your team and you're saying, okay, we're the number one seed in the East. We're tied 1-1 with Montreal, but none of our big guns have scored any goals yet. So if these guys start waking up and start putting the puck in the net, I mean, this series could be over, you know, in five or six games.
The coach was asked about this yesterday, and he did say, listen, that, you know, in the playoffs, you need your big guys to, you know, drive the ship. You know, they need to steer the ship and kind of lead the way. And, you know, that means get on the scoreboard from time to time. But I could sit here and point out to you that a couple years ago or 3 years ago, whatever it was, when the Penguins won the Stanley Cup, that neither Sidney Crosby nor Evgeny Malkin nor Phil Kessel were their leading goal scorer in the playoffs. Jake Guentzel was, right? So, you know, you look at it and say, well, these three guys were the three biggest moneymakers, and they didn't lead the team in scoring, and the team won the Stanley Cup anyway. Now, that doesn't mean that they only had 1 point throughout the playoffs. I know Giroux's got 1 point. I don't look at the three play-in games as real playoff games, the round-robin series. They just weren't. Teams weren't taking them like playoff games as seriously as playoff. They were getting backup goalie starts. They were bringing depth players into the lineup. It was almost a little bit, it was a little bit more than preseason, but not quite, you know, a regular season game. That's kind of what they were. So I don't put any stock in the fact that he didn't score in those three games. But yeah, you know, you're two games in here. You only scored two goals in the first game and you got shut out in the second. So the Flyers offense needs to have a little bit of a wake up there. There needs to be something overall. The thing about this team is that their depth is so good that they can get scoring from any one of their four lines. And so, you know, would it be nice if Claude Giroux scored a goal? Yes. Would it be nice if Kevin Hayes scored a goal? Yes. James Van Riemsdyk? Yes. It would be great if these guys could score. But the fact is that, you know, they have other players who can score as well. You guys saw Nick Aubé-Kubel score a couple goals against Tampa. Scott Laughton has been really good so far in the playoffs. They're getting help from the defense as well. I'm not as concerned about it. I'm really not. And I think that ultimately these guys will be there. And the one thing that I think that you're seeing across the league is I think you're seeing a little bit some of the older players are taking a little bit longer to kind of really get going here because they've had all this time off and their bodies aren't used to that, whereas the younger players in the league are really looking good in the playoffs so far because, you know, they're just younger and they're just it's human nature, I think, at that point, right? So, yeah, you could be a little bit concerned about it. If it goes on another 2-3 games and they're still not scoring, then I'd say, okay, let's talk about it. But as of right now, I don't think it's a major concern.
You know, Anthony, there's not a huge book to look at Carter Hart, but you know, he had a pretty good performance on his in Game 1. He gets the pull in Game 2. What kind of responses generally does he have in net for the Flyers after a game in which he's been pulled?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, the whole Flyers team has been great this year coming off of a loss, especially a bad loss. And I say that since January. Early in the year, they had some issues where they got blown out one game, and then the next game they didn't look good at all. I think that might have been kind of tied into the fact that they were on that road trip out west when they found out Oscar Lindblom had cancer, and I think it kind of really impacted the team emotionally. And I think I think back to that and say, well, that probably had something to do with it. But since January, every time the Flyers have lost, or even if they've had a bad loss, they've come back and won the next game. They've not lost two in a row since, I think it was the very beginning of the month of January. I think January 8th was when this streak started. So that's the one good thing. And Carter Hart has been a big part of that. And you know, he bounces back from a subpar game. Not that I thought that he was particularly bad in this game yesterday. I thought that the play in front of him was awful and they hung him out to dry. And I think that's why he got pulled. I think it was a smart idea by Alain Vigneault to get him out of the game because at that point, there's no chance that, you know, it can get better for Carter Hart. But I think he will bounce back. The one thing about him is he's unflappable, guys. He doesn't let anything bother him. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. He's so even keeled. I think you guys saw that a lot when he was the goalie for World Junior for Canada. And that hasn't changed. It's like he's got that same kind of response to pressure at this level, even though he's still just 22 years old, which is pretty amazing.
Anthony Sanfilippo is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, before we let you go, a question for you about a Flyers defenseman familiar to people here in Manitoba from his time with the Brandon Wheat Kings, Ivan Provorov. What is his ceiling as a defenseman? Is this a guy who could be in the conversation for Norris Trophy candidacies, as his career develops?
Yes, very simply, yes. I think Provorov, and I've been saying it for a few years, and to be honest, last year wasn't a great year for Provorov. There is actually his worst year since he turned pro. But getting paired back with a veteran defenseman like Matt Niskanen this year has shown you what kind of player he can be. And the thing is I think Provorov does so many things that don't get measured on a score sheet. Right. I mean, I think he's just a really solid number one guy who is going to be a number one defenseman in the NHL for the next 15 years. Right. So, you know, will he put up the kind of offense that I think some Norris Trophy winning defensemen put up? No, probably not. Although he did lead the NHL in goals by defensemen on the power play this year, so that's I guess helpful in that vein. But I mean, he's never going to be more than say a 50-point scorer at max, right? And is that enough to win a Norris Trophy? Maybe. He needs to be recognized for what he does defensively and how good he is at breakouts and how smart he is. And he's just, again, he's still growing. He's only 22 himself. So he's still kind of just becoming that next-tier player. I think he's going to be one of the top five defensemen in the NHL when you start looking at the young guys around the league who are just kind of taking off, like Makar in Colorado and Quinn Hughes in Vancouver and Heiskanen in Dallas. I think he kind of fits into that mold with those guys and really is going to be one of the top defensemen in the NHL for the next decade at least.
And, Anthony, we should give a big shout-out to Elkhorn, Manitoba's Travis Sanheim, who obviously is a top defenseman for the Flyers, had a big goal in the round robin against Washington. He's pretty good, too.
Yeah, you know, Sanheim is a guy, you know, he was a first-round pick who I think took a little bit longer than they had thought to kind of develop into the player that he is right now. But he's getting better and better. And they partnered him with Phil Myers, who's an undrafted free agent who ended up coming in here and really earning a spot in the top four. And as a second pair, Sanheim and Myers have been really good. They move the puck well. They skate really well. They got decent size. The one thing I've kind of liked about Sanheim that I didn't see early in his career, but I'm seeing more now, is he's a little bit more willing to go into the front of the net and be physical and be a little, you know, get into those dirty areas. He's willing to lay out and block a shot, which he hasn't been. We didn't see earlier in his career as well. I kind of thought he was a little bit more tried to avoid that kind of stuff, avoiding contact. And you thought, oh, is this player soft? He's not. It really just took a little bit more time for him to develop that. He's a solid player, and he's, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in the future he ends up becoming Ivan Provorov's partner. I think he's just a little bit behind where Provorov is at this juncture in his career, but you can see the progression, and I think he's a heck of a young player, and I think the Flyers got it right by drafting him in the first round.
With Sanheim, Provorov, and Carter Hart in net, the sky's the limit this season and going forward for the Philadelphia Flyers. Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
You got it, guys.
Our friend.
Anytime, take care, Anthony. Can't wait to see my bus up in Winnipeg.
We'll get it started right away. My kids are experts with Play-Doh. No problem.
We'll talk to Premier Brian Pallister. We know a few people here.
Yeah, we don't know anybody. Yeah. Nobody returns our calls. Thanks, Anthony. Be well, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
When we come back, we talk about the playoff exits, about the Edmonton Oilers and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Which team would you rather be right now after qualification round defeats? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This year, the young general manager hit back. Dubas was combative in defending his roster construction.
Well, we're not up against the cap, contrary to everyone's belief.
Is it possible that you and Brendan and the staff has misread the potential of this group?
No.
That was clips from Kyle Dubas's season-ending press conference. We spoke with Mark Masters earlier in the show about what happened in Toronto and with the Leafs, and that you heard Mark in that clip as well. Combative is the word that Mark used in describing Kyle Dubas, and I think it's a fair comment. I think combative is actually probably one of the more polite words. I thought defensive and petulant could also be used a little bit in some of Kyle Dubas's responses to questions about his team's exit, because if you don't think the Leafs are up against the salary cap, I'm not really sure what numbers mean to you, because they're pretty much up against the salary cap. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. So let me ask you guys this. We spoke to Mark Masters earlier in the show. You know, we heard the comments from Kyle Dubas. We heard the comments from Ken Holland and Connor McDavid earlier this week in Edmonton as well. Which team is in a better position entering this offseason? Both teams disappointing defeats. Both teams don't make the playoffs. They lose in the qualification round. You know, both teams have elite talent in Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Mitch Marner and William Nylander and John Tavares. Which team would you rather be today, given the salary cap, given everything, given roster construction? Edmonton or Toronto?
Yeah, it's a really good question because Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, just those two names alone, I think you'd give them the edge over, you know, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, you know, Mitch Marner. Certainly Connor McDavid is the best player in the game right now, certainly offensive player. But when you look at the Leafs up and down, and you have to factor in everything, I mean, Freddie Anderson, even though he has struggled in the playoffs, Edmonton's goaltending situation is no better off than it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And it's kind of funny, guys, that you've got the Calgary Flames, mm-hmm. you know, with Cam Talbot, you know, who didn't work out in Edmonton.
Yeah.
He seems to be playing pretty well. Shut out the Dallas Stars last night, right, boys? So, I mean, I think I would still take the Leafs roster, but I still think both of these rosters are, you know, probably a piece or two away from being, you know, again, we talk about it, but a Stanley Cup contender. But, you know, when we had Mark Masters on, you know, I didn't really ask the question very well. But what I was trying to say, you know, about that Leafs Blue Jackets series is when you look back at that series, guys, like the Leafs played pretty well. Like, mm-hmm. to me, it wasn't like a situation like the Penguins against the Canadiens. Like, the Leafs weren't very good in Game 5, I'll say that much. I mean, they couldn't score any goals.
They weren't really good in Game 4 either. They just got caught fire for 5 minutes.
But then, you know,
a minute 35.
Well, to play devil's advocate, though, they had that Game 3 that one was should have been in the books, right, as a win, and they let Columbus back in it. So you could have easily been up 2-1 in that series, and then if you're up 2-1, I mean, maybe you close it out in 4. All I'm saying is I still think the Leafs have a much more talented roster than the Blue Jackets. I mean, Seth Jones
and Oilers, you're saying the Leafs over the Blue Jackets.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And so Seth Jones and Zach Werenski to me and Jonas Korpi, like, to me, goaltending and defense – and, you know, the scrappiness of the Blue Jackets was the reason why they won that series. Like, they just ran into a team that is, to me, built for playoff hockey, right? Like, guys like Boone Jenner, Alex Texier, Nick Foligno, like, those guys.
So the implication there is that, and I don't disagree with you here, is that the Leafs are not built for playoff hockey. Because the Blue Jackets were so much better than them in a playoff series.
Well, they're certainly not built the same way. Like, right. the Leafs are a skill team. Like, they're built to beat you off the rush.
Yeah.
They're built to score on the power play.
Are they soft? Mentally? Are they soft?
I would say they might be. I don't think, I don't buy this whole thing that you need to have, you know, guys like, you know, Cal Clutterbuck and Boone Jenner. Like, the Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup without, you know, a necessarily name physical, you know, forward or anything. Like, what I'm saying is the Leafs aren't built the same way as the Blue Jackets or the St. Louis Blues, right? Like, they don't need to have they're not missing a Patrick Maroon. Like, Patrick Maroon is, or a player like that. I'm just using him as an example. Obviously, he won the Cup, and he's a great player, and he's playing well for Tampa, but you know what I'm saying, guys, right? Like, I don't think, you know, that's what they're missing. I think that what they're missing probably is a bit of mental fortitude and showing up in these big games. Like, they went to Game 7 2 years in a row against Boston. Boston goes on, they go to the Stanley Cup Final, go to 5 games against Columbus. Like, they're getting there, but they're just not kind of, you know, getting to that next level. So I don't think you can necessarily say that that's what they're missing, the physicality. But yes, I think they might be a little bit mentally weak. And let's not forget, guys, like, teams go through this. Like, the Washington Capitals had to go through this how many times, Dave?
Sure.
You know, losing to the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, they had to go through this for years before they won their cup in 2018.
And
I'm just saying, I don't necessarily think that the Toronto Maple Leafs are in a position where they have to make drastic moves. They probably have to, you know, address...
Do you trade one of their big four, Dave? Do you trade one of the big four forwards?
Well, that I mean, that's the question as to whether you're going to try and add that depth where you're lacking for the Leafs. But I think they probably will. I think, when you say big four, which ones are you specifically meaning?
Nylander, Tavares, Marner, and Matthews.
I don't think they're going to trade Marner, Matthews, or Tavares. I think Nylander would be the guy that you're probably willing to do, although apparently, and again, I mean, we don't watch it as closely, obviously, as the people there. Apparently, Nylander was very good. Kapanen is a guy who, you know, who is seen as a guy who could potentially be traded. The one thing you have to factor is some of these guys have won championships with the Toronto Marlies.
Yep.
Some of their third and fourth round line guys. So they do have guys who know how to get it done, to your point, Ez. But you know what? I'm with you. I think it's like one of those situations where, and that's probably the concern in Toronto, is that if you dump these guys early before they've reached that potential ceiling, you know, do you potentially miss out on a Washington Capitals type situation where you give your group enough time to be that group together and then you see what they can
I'll
do?
I'll say this much. I don't know if this ends up happening, but Alex Pietrangelo would be great on Toronto, but they need to replace.
Can't do it without,
no,
without making some
well,
other
and that's
moves.
Why you'd have to probably move out Nylander. But I think you're going to have to replace Tyson Barrie. He's a pending UFA. I don't think Barrie was not good in the playoffs.
No.
But Morgan Rielly, you know, Drew, how much I like Morgan Rielly. I think Travis Dermott's a really good defenseman. Rasmus Sandin is a guy that, you know, I think they're going to give, you know, more opportunity next year. So I think the core of the team is still okay. But I definitely think, you know, if you're Kyle Dubas, you're going to have to make the right moves in the offseason. I would, you know, think about like maybe like a team like the Carolina Hurricanes, more of like tinkering, bringing in, you know, some depth pieces. But I don't think that they're going to trade any one of the big three. Nylander, on the other hand, I could see him being moved.
Well, one team that certainly embodies that word and plays so well together, much like the Columbus Blue Jackets, is the New York Islanders. They are up 1-0 against the Capitals. They're up 2-0 now against the Capitals after winning last night. Shannon Hogan covers the Islanders for MSG. She's going to join us on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more to come on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Shortly past the bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number 3 in progress. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can reach us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From MSG, we are pleased to welcome to the program New York Islanders reporter Shannon Hogan. The Islanders up 2-0 on the Washington Capitals in their first round playoff matchup. Shannon, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, good afternoon. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Doing very well. Good afternoon in the Eastern time zone. Good morning still in the Central time zone. So this is one of those rare instances where we are both correct. Yeah,
obviously, we're only half asleep, half awake.
So. Shannon, after a late game, you're kind of like, what time is it? Where am I? Is it still the morning?
Right.
Where are we?
Exactly. Time is nothing but a false construct anyways, or something philosophical like that makes
sense.
That's
way too deep for me, Drew.
Yeah, sorry, I apologize for that in advance. Anyway, Shannon obviously brought you on to talk about the Islanders. They do take that 2-0 series lead against the Capitals, and you know the Capitals were one of the top four teams. They were in the round robin, and the Islanders had to, you know, got rid of the Florida Panthers relatively easily in that qualification round series. So now with this 2-0 lead, why shouldn't the Islanders be considered the favorite over the Capitals for the remainder of the series?
I would think that they should be considered the favorite, especially if you looked at how the third period went down yesterday. I mean, the way that they shut down the Capitals to maintain that 3-2 lead and then go on to add two more goals, I think was very impressive, no matter what team you're talking about. The reason I don't think you can sew up the books right now on this series is because it is the Washington Capitals. And you do have Alex Ovechkin, who was quiet in game one and in a round robin. And we did see what he was able, of course, to do yesterday. If the Islanders leave him too unattended or if he gets a lucky goal. So I still think this series is going to be a 5-6 game series. I don't anticipate the Islanders sweeping the Washington Capitals, but hey, people didn't think the Islanders were going to sweep the Penguins in the first round last year, and they were able to do that. So I think if they continue to play the type of hockey we saw in the second and third period yesterday, both offensively and with the defense that they're known for, they definitely are the favorite team at this point over the Capitals.
Well, Shannon, I wanted to ask you about Josh Bailey because the Islanders definitely have, you know, a very deep group of forwards. I mean, you think of, you know, Anthony Beauvillier, Brock Nelson, you know, Matthew Barzell. I mean, you know the names, but, you know, Josh Bailey scores the winning goal in game one. He was really good in the first round. I guess I shouldn't call it the first round, the qualification round against the Florida Panthers. And obviously Bailey has been a member of the Islanders his entire career, but do you think maybe with the way he's played in the qualification round and in these first couple of games moving forward into this first round, he's starting to get more credit for how good of a two-way forward he is? Because I think that's something maybe that people, you know, outside of New York don't appreciate as much about Bailey is just how good of an all-around forward he is.
100%. And I think it's something that true Islanders fans have learned to appreciate in Josh Bailey's game, especially over the last two or three years. I mean, he was a highly touted player for the Islanders within the organization his whole career and really kind of wasn't living up to those expectations early on, but has definitely flowered underneath Barry Trotz. And even before Barry with Doug Weight, I think Josh, if you talk to any of his teammates, past or present, they will say he has one of the highest hockey IQs in the league. He sees the ice tremendously. He is very, very smart. He is responsible with the puck for the most part. And I know Barry Trotz really respects him. And it's interesting you mentioned how people might view him as a two-way forward around the league. Barry Trotz even mentioned when he came to the Islanders 2 years ago, after going through training camp and after going through really the first half of the season, I had a chance to sit down one-on-one with him. And one of his biggest surprises with his team was Josh Bailey. He said, you know, from the outside looking in, you don't see all of the little things he does so well. Even if you're scouting the Islanders and you're the Washington Capitals or another team, you're not necessarily knowing that. And that was coming from a coach who had been coaching in the Metro Division. So to say that about a player that the Islanders saw regular, or that the Capitals playing the Islanders saw regularly, I thought that was a very high compliment and pretty big praise for Barry Trotz to say that about Josh Bailey. But I'm not surprised when he has games like he did in the qualifying round or like he did in the first two against Washington. I think when Josh Bailey is clicking and is kind of in his best and in his zone, it's those quiet, subtle plays. He tends to be in the right place at the right time. He tends to make the good, strong passes when they need him to be. And that's kind of when you see him show up on the score sheet. But you don't always see him, you know, show up on the score sheet. But I agree with what you said. He definitely has become a little more well-known, I feel like, around the NHL. Also, you have to keep in mind, everybody's watching hockey 24-7. So even if you guys are in Winnipeg, you might not normally tune in to watch an Islanders-Capitals series. But the way that the NHL has set this up has given everybody the luxury of really watching the entire league and enjoying games and enjoying players that they might not normally get a chance to see on a regular basis.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is New York Islanders reporter Shannon Hogan. The Isles have a 2-0 series lead over the Washington Capitals in their first round matchup.
Well, Shannon, we're a Manitoba-based show, and of course we have to ask about a Manitoban, Dauphin, Manitoba's Barry Trotz. You know, spent 4 years with the Washington Capitals there, head coach, obviously won the Stanley Cup with them. Does that play a role, do you think? Does that give him an advantage to being able to game plan against this Washington team, having such an intimate knowledge of that group?
Oh, 100%. I mean, he knows these players inside and out, and not just what they're able to do on the ice. He knows their personalities. He knows their dispositions. He knows their mental capability and the things that get under their skin because he knows them so well. I think, you know, I've had other people ask, do you think it's still emotional for Barry Trotz? And I think this kind of goes in together. Yes, I do think he has the ability to look at this Capitals team, and he's very well aware of what they do, and he's very well aware of what his team's strengths are. When it comes to the emotional component of it, I don't think that as much plays into it anymore for Barry. I think he's kind of been able to close the book a little bit on what he accomplished in Washington, but still has those relationships with those players and always will. Anybody that you talk to that's won a cup as a group, obviously that's a special bond. No doubt. I mean, I think everybody was kind of rooting for this matchup because it's a great storyline. I mean, it's a great storyline. You have a world-class player in Alex Ovechkin. You have a world-class coach with Barry Trotz and some really exciting up-and-coming talent on the Islanders team and some veterans to cheer for. So it's kind of has everything you're looking for on the media side when you want to talk about things. But No doubt. Barry Trotz knows this team very, very well, and he will do what he needs to do to maneuver to put his team in the best situation that he can as the series moves forward.
New York Islanders reporter Shannon Hogan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shannon, I remember back to February when it was a simpler time and the trade deadline was a significant event and we weren't necessarily in the midst of a global pandemic. And I remember the thinking that the Isles paid too much in acquiring defenseman Andy Green from the New Jersey Devils, taking a second round draft pick and defenseman David Quenneville to the Devils in exchange for Green. What has he meant to the Islanders' blue line since he came over, and how has his impact been in terms of the on-ice performance?
I don't think you're the only one that thought that with the Green acquisition, but what people might not be as familiar is Lou Lamoriello knows Green inside and out and was with him, you know, for his tenure in New Jersey and knew what he was getting, not just as a veteran defenseman, but as a guy in the room and as a leader and as a veteran defenseman that can really help groom younger players. And you're not seeing it in the series right now, but there was really high praise from Barry Trotz with Andy Green being paired with Noah Dobson during training camp. And that was a very real possibility. You know, you never know, especially with defensemen, what happens in the postseason as far as injuries and whatnot. We saw that with Johnny Boychuk. And so Boychuk has been, you know, out after that first game with the Matheson hit, and Andy Green was ready to go. But leading up into the qualifying series, there was still a question mark as to who that third pair defenseman was going to be, because Dobson and Green had made the trip and there was conversation that maybe they had been impressive enough in training camp to kind of step in. We've seen that from Green from the jump of him jumping in the lineup. He is, yes, more a stay-at-home defenseman. He doesn't necessarily have as much of that physical pop that you're going to see from a Johnny Boychuk type player, but Barry Trotz has a lot of confidence in him. I know Lou Lamoriello has a lot of confidence in him. The guys like him, and he has playoff experience. And if you look at the Islanders defensemen as a whole, yes, Nick Leddy won a cup back with Chicago several years ago, and Johnny Boychuk had won the cup with Boston, but the other defensemen are fairly fresh in their NHL careers and fresh in their playoff experience. So I think having a player like Andy Green, not just as far as what he's able to do in a game, but what he's able to bring with the mentality of playing in the playoffs and being a calm presence out there, is really, really valuable. He had just mentioned yesterday before the game how he sees his role on the team of just helping the team and helping the defense just ride the wave and stay as even keel as possible. And you've seen that already in these first two games. The Islanders have gone down to the Washington Capitals and not panicked. I mean, they've been able to come back strong in the game, and in the third period last night, like I said, to start this off, it was really impressive what they were able to do to keep Washington off the score sheet.
You know, Shannon, just sticking with, you know, the trade deadline, obviously the other big move was acquiring J.G. Pageau, and, you know, speaking of what the Islanders had to give up, they gave up a first, second, and a third-round pick, and then they signed him to that six-year deal, and I think he's got three goals now in the postseason for the Islanders, and I feel like we could, you know, talk to you for another 10 minutes about the Islanders' forward group because it's so deep, but is J.G. Pageau exactly what, you know, they thought he would be, pardon me, when they acquired him and signed him to that six-year deal?
I think so, and I think there were people that were saying, like, you know, 6 years, I don't want this money, like you mentioned before with Andy Green. I think there were some sentiments around the New York area about J.G. Pageau, but that was a lot of people that might not have been familiar with what he brought in Ottawa. And like I mentioned, Lou Lamoriello does a very good job. He's got a lot of experience. He has a very good heartbeat on what players do, not only on the ice, but how they're going to fit into the room. And every NHL team has their own special chemistry. And I'm sure there are reporters that say this about the teams that they cover, but there is something really special about this Islanders group and that has been for this core for many, many years. I mean, you look at Brock Nelson, you look at Jordan Eberle, guys that had an opportunity to go somewhere else last year and said, you know what, no, we want to stay. We want to be a part of this for the long haul. We believe in this. And then you have the combination of the talented, you know, Matt Barzal and Anthony Beauvillier that are young. And I think they saw an opportunity up the middle to have a player like J.G. Pageau, who was also very effective and a leader in Ottawa, to join this Islanders group and to be a big part of what they see as the future of this team. And I think he's been able to deliver on that very, very well. And he has a great personality, too. Like, his personality kind of fits in. Yeah, he's on, you know, he's able to score some goals and be effective, but you've seen him kind of, you know, stand up for his teammates. And that was game one against the Rangers. We saw that from him. So I think the team had a really good feeling about him going into, you know, March and hoping to make that playoff push. Unfortunately, we had that pause because of the pandemic, and poor JG was waiting for his first win in an Islanders sweater. So he had to wait until they went back to training camp in July and then got into the qualifying round. And you can just sense, even from his interviews, that the training camp was really important to him, to feel like he was able to settle in with this group. Anytime you're acquired at the deadline, it's kind of a rush jam to you know, find your way into a lineup and figure out what your role is and learn the system and whatnot. I think having him be able to settle in with a training camp in July and jump into the qualifiers was valuable for him and valuable for the Islanders.
Shannon Hogan covers the New York Islanders for MSG. Shannon, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs.
Likewise, Shannon. Thanks. You
Thanks,
too.
Shannon.
Take care, Shannon. Shannon's appearance on the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. When we come back, one final segment on this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Keeps it in for Kucherov. Right circle shot blocked. Rebound Sergachev. Right circle Kucherov. Shoots blocked. Point high slot.
Shoot! Score! 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 Brayden Point! Brayden Point! Brayden Point! The Lightning win it! They win it in the fifth overtime! 3-2!
Tampa Bay Radio with that call. We have a little known rule here on the show that if you score in the fifth overtime, we're going to play that audio. It basically, it's an automatic rule on this show that if a game goes to five overtimes and whoever gets the game-winning goal is going to get the privilege of hearing their name mentioned on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Five OTs is five is pretty significant.
Oh, and yeah. Can we just talk about right now how ridiculous it is that people are saying that?
No, I have to agree.
Like,
is that
stop.
No, hold on. Is that
sudden
really a
death?
Thing?
Like, I would watch a game if it went to 12 overtimes.
No, but hold on.
Anybody making that argument is a disingenuous buffoon.
But I have
the best
to tell
thing
you.
In sports.
But I have to tell you, all jokes aside, is that like, you know, sometimes like something becomes a thing and you're like, how did that actually become a thing? Like, is it really a thing?
Yeah.
Or did someone just say it once and it became kind of big?
No, we're not going to have 4-on-4 or 3-on-3 hockey in overtime. Sorry.
Hockey, look, this hockey overtime is never going to be as good as with fans in the building. Right. Not you can't even. It's
still pretty awesome.
It's good, but look. Yeah,
you'll never compare.
You'll never compare with actual fans in the building. Look, that's 100%.
Yeah.
But overtime,
it's sacred.
Is,
don't take away something that is sacred.
You can't. You know what? You would just ruin a perfect product.
The guys who are saying it are disingenuous at best. Before we leave, we want to make mention that this is the 9th anniversary today of Rick Rippon's passing. And we all know what Rick Rippon meant to the Winnipeg Jets and the True North organization. We didn't want the day to go unacknowledged. If you're struggling, if you need some help, reach out. There is no stigma. You know, we know that the hashtag Bell Let's Talk, whatever it might be, reach out if you're struggling, if you need some help. Somebody is there, and they're going to help you. That's it for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor doing a great job behind the board. You know that the show is available for download. Get it wherever you get your best podcasts. For Dave Manouk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.